Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written for people learning English. Coming up on the program, I report on the Mauna Loa volcanic eruption in Hawaii. Katie Weaver has a story on the late Christine McVie from the band Fleetwood Mac. And Faith Perlow answers a question from a listener. Later, we listen to part 3 of The Murders in the Rue Morgue by Edgar Allan Poe. But first, Mauna Loa, the world's largest active volcano, is erupting again. Melted rock called lava from the volcano in the U.S. state of Hawaii is slowly moving toward roads and homes. People are asking if anything can be done to stop or change the direction of the lava's flow. The volcano on Hilo, the biggest of the Hawaiian islands, produces large amounts of lava when it erupts. Over the years, people have tried to slow the flow of lava from Hawaii's volcanoes using prayer, walls, even bombs. Some people say build a wall or board up, and other people say no, don't, said Scott Rowland. He is a geologist at the University of Hawaii. People have rarely had success stopping lava. Even with technological progress, stopping lava is difficult and dependent on the speed of the flow and the land. But many in Hawaii question whether anyone should test nature. Attempts to divert lava have a long history in Hawaii. In 1881, the governor of Hawaii Island called for a day of prayer to stop lava from Mauna Loa as it headed for the town of Hilo. But the lava kept coming. The U.S. Geological Survey tells the story that Princess Regent Lili Uokalani and her department leaders went to Hilo and considered ways to save the town. They developed plans to build barriers to divert the flow and placed dynamite to drain the lava supply. They asked Pele, the Hawaiian god of lava and fire, to stop the flow. The flow stopped before the barriers were built. More than 50 years later, Thomas A. Jagger, the founder of the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory, asked the U.S. Army to send airplanes to bomb a Mauna Loa vent to disrupt the lava. A volcanic vent is a place on the Earth's surface where lava or gas can escape. Jagger said the bombing helped to stop the flow, but geologists today are doubtful. The lava flow did not end with the bombing. Instead, the flows slowed over the next few days and did not change paths. Rowland said officials could build a large wall of broken rock to protect the highway on Hawaii Island. If the land is flat, then lava would build up behind the wall, but the lava may flow over it. That happened when something similar was attempted in Kapoho Town in 1960. Quickly moving lava flows like those from Kilauea in 2018 would be more difficult to stop, Rowland said. It would have been really hard to build the walls fast enough for them, he said. He said he believes most people in Hawaii would not want to build a wall to protect the highway, because it would mess with Pele. Hawaii Governor David Ige was also governor during the 2018 Kilauea eruption. He told reporters his experience showed him it is not possible to overcome nature and Pele. Kealoha Pishata is a native Hawaiian cultural practitioner. She said thinking you should physically divert lava is a Western idea grounded in the thought that humans have to control everything. She said people need to change to the lava, not the other way around. We are not separate from nature, she said. We are a part of nature.
British rock and roll musician Christine McVie died Wednesday at the age of 79. McVie wrote many hit songs, played the keyboard, and sang as a member of the group Fleetwood Mac. Her death was announced on the band's social media accounts. No cause of death or other details were immediately provided. A family statement said she passed away peacefully at hospital with family around her after a short sickness. A few hours ago, I was told that my best friend in the whole world since the first day of 1975 had passed away, bandmate Stevie Nicks said in a handwritten note posted to Instagram. McVie was a steady presence in a group that saw many membership changes since it formed in the late 1960s. Fleetwood Mac started out as a London blues band and developed into one of the defining makers of 1970s California pop rock. From 1975 to 1980, the band sold tens of millions of records. Christine McVie was seen as a peacemaker. I was supposedly like the Mother Teresa, who would hang out with everybody, or just try and keep everything nice and cool and relaxed, she told Rolling Stone earlier this year. But they were great people. They were great friends. Fleetwood Mac was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1998. At the ceremony, they played McVie's song, Say You Love Me. McVie wrote or co-wrote many of the band's most popular songs. Don't Stop, a piece inspired by the end of her marriage, gained surprising political meaning in 1992. An American presidential candidate chose the song, and its repeated phrase, "Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow," to represent his 1992 campaign. The candidate, Bill Clinton, won the election and became president. Fleetwood Mac performed at his inauguration party. McVie was born Christine Ann Perfect in the British town of Bowth, Lancashire. She came from a musical family. Her father was a violinist and music teacher, and her grandfather played organ at Westminster Abbey. McVie's two marriages to John McVie and Eduardo Quintela both ended in divorce. She was also involved with the Beach Boys' Dennis Wilson for several years. She wrote the song Only Over You about him. Stevie Nicks and Christine McVie formed a lasting friendship. They agreed that as two of the rare women in rock and roll, they would always stand up for each other. But the group's huge success also led to conflicts and the desire for independent work. Over the years, Nicks became a star in her own right. McVie released solo albums, including Christine McVie and Christine Perfect, as well as a 2017 joint recording with bandmate Lindsey Buckingham, called Lindsey Buckingham, Christine McVie. Mick Fleetwood and John McVie were there at the founding of Fleetwood Mac, and were the only ones to remain all the way through. Christine McVie left the group in the 1990s, when she was seemingly done forever with the rock star life. By 2014, she had changed her mind. Then, of course, I started to miss it. I called Mick and asked, "How would you feel about me coming back to the band?" she said. I'm Katie Weaver.
This week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question about the words reduce and decrease. Dear teacher, would you please explain to me when to use decrease and reduce? Thanks for giving us such valuable points. Kind regards, Mahmoud in Saudi Arabia. Hello, Mahmoud. Thank you for writing to us. The words decrease and reduce are often thought of as having the same meaning. However, there are some differences, especially in the uses of reduce. Let's look at each word more closely. Decrease is a verb that can take a direct object, meaning it is transitive. It can also be intransitive, which means that it does not take a direct object. Decrease means to grow less in amount, size, or strength over time, or to cause to be less. Online shopping and big stores like Target have helped to decrease shopping malls in the U.S. from 2,500 in the 1980s to around 700 malls now. Voter turnout numbers decreased during the midterm election in some states like West Virginia and Virginia. Decrease can also be a noun. It is the process of growing less over time. It is a countable noun. For example, there has been a decrease in newspaper reading over many years, possibly because of the internet. Now let's move on to reduce. Reduce is a verb and has many more meanings. It is most often used as a transitive verb that takes a direct object. But sometimes we can use it without a direct object. The general meaning is to make something smaller. This meaning is most closely related to decrease. Electric cars could reduce our need for gasoline-powered cars. Reduce can also mean to bring together into one and to narrow down. Every year, I reduce my clothes by going through my closet and giving away some pieces. We can also reduce a liquid by boiling it. This makes the taste stronger and there is less liquid. If you bring sugar to a boil and then reduce it, you are left with a thick caramel sauce. Reduce can also mean to bring to a certain state or condition, usually a negative one. we can use reduce with the preposition to create a phrasal verb. The concert reduced her to tears. This sentence is in the active voice. This means that the concert moved the woman emotionally to such an extent that she cried. We can also use the passive voice to mean that someone is reduced to a state or condition. She was reduced to uncontrollable laughter after seeing the funny movie. The forest was reduced to ashes by the wildfire. Please let us know if these explanations and examples have helped you. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
You just heard Faith Perlow's report on the difference between decrease and reduce. Hi, Faith. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me again, Dan. Did you enjoy the report?
I did. But I have a question about another word that sounds similar to reduce, the word deduce with a D. Does deduce have a similar meaning to reduce?
That's a great question, Dan. It's common to hear similar sounding words and think that they are related in some way. Deduce is a verb that means to come to a conclusion or understanding because of facts and knowledge about it. For example, I deduce that you like cats, Dan, because you have a little bit of cat fur on your pants.
Oh, wow. That is very different from reduce. And you're right, Faith. I love cats, but there's fur everywhere.
One of the meanings of reduce, if you remember, is to narrow down or bring together into one. So coming to a conclusion and narrowing down is similar too. But with deduce, it's about ideas. And with reduce, it's about physical things.
That's a great explanation, Faith. See you again next week?
I sure hope so, Dan. Thanks for having me today.
The Murders in the Rue Morgue by Edgar Allan Poe. Part 3.
My housemate in Paris, Auguste Dupin, was an interesting young man with a busy, forceful mind. This mind could, it seemed, look right through a man's body into his deepest soul. After reading in the newspaper about the terrible murder of a woman and her daughter, Dupin was consumed with the mystery. He questioned the ability of the Paris police to solve the crime. I told Dupin that it seemed to me that it was not possible to explain the strange details surrounding the killings.
No, no. I think you are wrong. A mystery it is, yes. But there must be an answer. There must. Let us go to the house where it happened and see what we can see. I know the head of the police, and he will permit our visit. It will be interesting and give us some pleasure.
I thought it strange that Dupin thought the activity would give us pleasure. But I said nothing. It was late in the afternoon when we reached the house on the Rue Morgue. It was easily found, for
for there were still many persons, in fact a crowd, standing there looking at it. Before going in, we walked all around it, and Dupin carefully looked at the neighboring houses as well. I could not understand the reason for such great care. Finally, we entered the house. We went up the stairs to the room where the daughter's body was found. Both bodies were in the room now. The police had left the room as they had found it in every other way. I saw nothing beyond what the newspaper had told us. Dupin looked with great care at everything, at the bodies, the walls, the fireplace, the windows. Then we went home. Dupin said nothing. I could see the cold look in his eyes, which told me that his mind was working busily, quickly. Dupin said nothing about our exploration until the next morning, when he suddenly asked me a question.
Did you not notice something especially strange about what we saw at the house on the Rue Morgue?
Nothing more than what we both read in the newspaper, which was unusual indeed. How shall we explain the horrible force, the unusual strength used in these murders? And whose were the voices that were heard? No one was found except the dead women. Yet there was no way for anyone to escape. And the wild condition of the room, the body which was found head down in the chimney, the terrible broken appearance of the body of the old lady, with its head cut off. These are all so far from what might be expected that the police are standing still. They don't know where to begin.
These things are unusual indeed, but they are not deep mysteries. We should not ask what has happened, but what has happened that has never happened before. In fact, the very things that the police think cannot possibly be explained are the things which will lead me to the answer. Indeed, I believe they have already led me to the answer.
I was so surprised that I could not say a word. Dupin looked quickly at the door.
I am now waiting for a person who will know something about these murders, these wild killings. I do not think he did them himself, but I think he will know the killer. I hope I am right about this. If I am, then I expect to find the whole answer today. I expect the man here, in this room, at any moment. It is true that he may not come, but he probably will.
But who is this person? How did you find him?
I'll tell you. While we wait for this man we do not know, for I have never met him, while we wait, I will tell you how my thoughts went.
Dupin began to talk, but it did not seem that he was trying to explain to me what he had thought. It seemed that he was talking to himself. He looked not at me, but at the wall.
It has been fully proved that the voices heard by the neighbors were not the voices of the women who were killed. Someone else was in the room. It is therefore certain that the old woman did not first kill her daughter and then kill herself. She would not have been strong enough to put her daughter's body where it was found. And the manner of the old lady's death shows that she could not have caused it herself. A person can kill himself with a knife, yes, but he surely cannot cut his own head almost off, then drop the knife on the floor and jump out the window. It was murder, then, done by some third person or persons. And the voices heard were the voices of these persons. Let us now think carefully about the things people said about those voices. Did you notice anything especially strange in what was told about them?
Well, yes. Everybody agreed that the low voice was the voice of a Frenchman. But they could not agree about the high voice.
Ah, that was what they said, yes. But that was not what was so strange about what they said. You say you have noticed nothing that makes their stories very different from what might have been expected. Yet, there was something. All these persons, as you say, agreed about the low voice, but not about the high, hard voice. The strange thing here is that when an Italian, an Englishman, a Spaniard, and a Frenchman tried to tell what the voice was like, each one said it sounded like the voice of a foreigner. How strangely unusual that voice really must have been. Here are four men from four big countries, and not one of them could understand what the voice said. Each one gave it a different name. Now, I know that there are other countries in the world. You will say that perhaps it was the voice of someone from one of those other lands. Russia, perhaps. But remember, not one of these people heard anything that sounded like a separate word.
Here, Dupin turned and looked at me.
This is what we have learned from the newspaper. I don't know what I have led you to think, but I believe that in this much of the story, there are enough facts to lead us in the one and only direction to the right answer. What this answer is, I will not say. Not yet. But I want you to keep in mind that this much was enough to tell me what I must look for when we were in that house on the Rue Morgue. And I found it. What did I first look for? The path of escape, of course. I mean, we agree the killers were not ghosts. They could not move through walls. So, how did they escape? At first, I saw no way out. It had been necessary for the neighbors to break down the door in order to enter the room. There was no other door. The opening above the fireplace is too narrow for even a child to go through. That leaves only the windows. We must make that exit somehow possible. Remember, there are two windows in the room. Both of them, you will remember, are made of two parts. To open the window, one must lift up the bottom half. One of these windows is easily seen. The lower part of the other is out of sight behind the big bed. I looked carefully at the first of these windows. It was firmly closed, fastened like the door on the inside. To keep the window closed, to fasten it, someone had put a strong iron nail into the wood at the side of the window in such a way that the window could not be raised. At least it seemed that the nail held the window closed. The nail was easy to see. There it was. And the people who discovered the killings used their greatest strength and could not raise the window. I, too, tried to raise the window and could not. I went to the second window and looked behind the bed at the lower half of the window. There was a nail here, too, which held the window closed. Without moving the bed, I tried to open this window also, and again I could not do so. But I did not stop looking for an answer there.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak.